Good morning. So this is the management or how Microsoft IT manages its Office 365 services from a tenant perspective session. So I recognize some of you from the last session. Hopefully this one will be just as good. I was told that they saved all the good sessions for Friday, so this is one of those good sessions. So thank you for coming. My name is Jim Adams. I'm from Redmond, Washington at Microsoft, and this is...
Scott Clevin, same place.
And we're both program managers in the collaboration space for Microsoft IT. And we've been asked to come down here and tell you how we do it. So this isn't so much recommendations as to just these are the things that we did. Some of them were dumb, some of them were okay, but these are our learnings. So you can take it for what it's worth. We'll tell you what we did, and you can take back with it what you wish. Oh, what's it doing? Got to have the mouse in the right spot. Here we go.
There we go.
There we are. All right. So you'll learn how we support this evolving service. You'll benefit from some of our lessons learned, and we'll talk a little bit about social evolution at Microsoft, in particular Microsoft IT and the help desk and how we support the products. And hopefully by the time you've been to an hour of this, you'll have confidence, and you'll be able to let go
it just works.
With the old mindset of IT and embrace the cloud. Yeah, we've done that.
Magical.
So, there's a rough agenda. I won't read it. We're going to actually live it. Here we go. Okay. So this is what our environment looked like as far as numbers of data centers yesterday. By yesterday, I'm talking about 5-6 years ago. We had data centers scattered all over the place because of connectivity issues, because the bandwidth between the tail sites and the main data centers were so narrow, we had to support a lot more data centers. So this is what it looks like today because of improved bandwidth, because of the network infrastructure improving by leagues. We're able to bring it down to just a few data centers. In fact, we are in the process of decommissioning our Reno and Sao Paulo data centers as far as collaboration services goes, and we'll only have our presence in Seattle, Dublin, and Singapore. And this is all of our collaboration services. This would be Link, this would be SharePoint, Exchange, all of that. So tomorrow, it looks like this for Microsoft IT's on-premises solutions. And Microsoft IT has to... Microsoft IT
the power.
Has to continue to have an on-premises solution because we do something called dog food. We covered this a little bit during our prior session. Dog fooding is what? If you were at the prior session,
no.
don't answer. Yes.
Eating your own dog food is running your own code before you give it to customers.
Excellent.
Were you in last session?
No.
All right.
Okay. Would you like a T-shirt or a cup?
T-shirt, please.
T-shirt. What size would you like? Small, medium, large?
No.
Medium.
Small, extra large, extra, extra large.
Small, medium, and large. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is how we measure success. Extra large, medium.
Yeah. Be quiet. Okay. So, Microsoft SharePoint environment. These slides, if you were at the previous session, you've seen these before. We're in three data centers for SharePoint. Seattle data center services the Americas. The Dublin data center services Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And Singapore services our Asia Pacific farms. This is the rough breakout of the content between the farms. 64% of it is in the Americas, 21% in EMEA, and 15% in Asia Pacific.
Really quick. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'll answer after this one.
Okay. Totals, we have 36 terabytes as of February 2012. That number is about 38 terabytes right now.
Yeah, and it's important to note, you know, we discussed this again last session. What we're going to talk about is what we're doing to support it. This isn't what we have in the cloud yet. We do have a fraction of this and a percentage of this that we've moved over, and this is our large target to move over. But what we'll be talking about is what we're doing to actually support in the cloud, which is a percentage of this.
Right. So this is all on premises, and we're in the throes of migration as we speak.
Literally.
Literally. We're migrating as we speak. What does it take to support our on-premises environment for collaboration? This is a rough breakdown. We have about 47 full-time employees doing the collaboration services space, which includes Link, Exchange, and SharePoint. And we have our custom portal spaces that support the line of business applications, the line of business portals that are special to a business unit. We have 13 full-time employees servicing that with 44 vendors, and of course, on the left-hand side, the utility space, 144 vendors. The dichotomy here is utility space on the left, no customizations, out-of-box SharePoint. Custom space on the right, maybe 5% of all the content is in the custom space amongst a small number of portal spaces that support the individual business needs, customizations of the business units.
It's really quick, and it's for those that are interested in what the hierarchy actually looks like. We have separate organizations within our umbrella for Exchange and Link and SharePoint. And then within SharePoint alone, it's just not one large team. We have two infrastructure teams that run the day-to-day support, one for custom and one for our standard utility. We have a team of engineers that look more at the future state, and that's a smaller team of about 4 to 6 of us. And then we have a UX, technology adoption team, that really focuses on scenarios and for the end user in our business units. And then we have a solution delivery team that sits on top of that that kind of builds a long-term roadmap. So various levels that make up this.
So our services are divided up into utility and our custom space, and we have approximately 45 farms total on premises. Our utilities is primarily our main collaboration sites, personal sites, social sites, SharePoint Online, and then a shared services farm which renders the search capability using FAST. The rest of it is custom portal. But like I said, the split is rather uneven. 85-90% of it is in the utility space, and the balance is in the custom space.
Perfect. So the next slide is, we're not going to go too deep. It's an eyesore. It's just quick reference material. Basically, as Jim noted before, we have various environments and platforms that we offer our end users. This slide simply shows that they're not the same. We define what the platform is by the services that we enable. The custom portals at the end, you can see it's all mostly by request. It's a custom dedicated farm. We're pretty standard on the utility farm, except for the nice middle little column right there.
Is anybody red-green colorblind in the audience? No.
Perfect. So then it looks like a Christmas tree in here. And dog food, you'll see almost everything's lit up. That's because that's where we deploy everything first, make sure it scales, make sure there's adoption, and then if it works, then we go on to the SharePoint and the other properties. Now, the fun part. Jim mentioned we have 40-plus environments. Each environment has a different namespace. The problem that you have going to the cloud that we've seen is that's what you get, and that's it. You get two managed paths. You get sites, and you get teams. That's where everything's got to go into. Your personals, it's manageable. Everybody at Microsoft has an alias. It's all distinct. It's unique to that individual. So when we migrate you to your personal site or you create your personal site, there's no problem with conflicts. You're okay. But when you're trying to move over 100,000-plus site collections, all potentially with distinct name paths or of within those 40 farms, and that's what you get to go into, you're going to run into conflicts. Now, you can change the URL up front. It's easy to do. You're going to have to change it for the individual anyway. There's no redirection out of box. So in our case, HTTP SharePoint is now going to go microsoft.sharepoint.com whack site collection name. And so users will get good at typing because your URLs will actually get quite large. Now, the fun part is saying, all right, we're going to jam you in there. We're going to move you in there and do that. But how do you do it? So marketing and IT typically don't go hand in hand. Marketing has one message and IT lives it a different way. But we have to leverage it, and this is what we did in this case, is we set communications and set expectations early and often. And we did it as best as we can, but while trying to be fluid. So we set expectations and we leveraged all channels. We have custom portals, things like our intranet through the company, through our social feeds, we're able to hit broad audience with what we're gonna do and set expectations with commitments. Don't just be vague. Everybody's job depends on their ability to access these sites. You've gotta be able to provide firm commitments to the end users. Prepare the reference materials. Do what you can. The product offers quite a bit of documentation. Identify that, stock it, put it on a portals and reference that for the customers. And deploy it beforehand. Understand your roadmap and what you're gonna do so that you can map this out. And if you have that material available beforehand, you can start educating your users, which is gonna help your transition to the cloud much easier.
There's a lot of resources in Microsoft.com that you can download that are absolutely free. Learning guides, things like that, TechNet online, MSDN articles, things like that.
Yeah.
Leverage the free stuff.
It's the best place. You will have impacts. If anybody's migrated from 2003 to 2007 or 2007 to 2010, you know somebody will break, and most likely it's the person that's extremely vocal and extremely opinionated that's going to raise it up the food chain. For us, everybody has a presentation for Balmer due that next day.
So in the audience, how many of you are looking toward migrating to the cloud or taking advantage of Office 365 in the near future?
Is anybody already out there? Good. We actually got quite a few. What have been some, just a random pull on, what are some of the issues that you guys have seen? Nothing. Wonderful. Golden ticket. Nice. Anybody else from your early experiences? Exchange, the hybrid models. Very difficult story. And we went into that last one. The hybrid story is political filter. There's work to be done with the hybrid story. There is progress being made. MSIT, in a slide that we provided earlier, the whole benefit of the cloud is saving money. And that's the communication that goes out. It's supposed to reduce the capacity, your need to run state, your hardware to support, your ops costs. We're running at a heavier cost than savings right now, because MSIT as a whole has made investments into a hybrid model, specifically in SharePoint, and because we need that continuity. We've leveraged out-of-the-box APIs to do so, but it does come at a cost.
We broke our egress to the internet. All of our solutions were intranet prior to our migration to the cloud. So we migrate all of these SharePoint sites and email into the cloud, but we failed to take into consideration the soda straw that we had to go through to get to the internet from within CorpNet. So we had to do some backtracking and work with the networking people to accelerate an already existing project to upgrade our infrastructure for better egress. So that's one of those painful lessons learned that we'd be more than happy to share with you.
That's very true.
Enough said.
Does that help answer your question a little bit? All right, so as we referenced, preparing your end user is critical. What we've done is we've created a few portals. IT Web has guides and videos. Yes, these are from the product group, but this is also free material that can be referenced by anybody of the customers out there. We've built a reference point that we can point end users to. We've created WorkSmart guides for key scenarios in how to leverage the product to its utmost ability. And it's really helped with our transition and our understanding. Where user education before has been difficult. We have 182,000 plus thousand people in our company. Trying to get the message out to everybody is hard. By doing this, we have seen ramp up with the cloud that's been pretty impressive. And we'll get into some numbers in a second, but we're in the tens of thousands now, just over 6 weeks, and most of that's organic growth. So the fun part, what does it mean to support this? So, how many of you here are in operations or responsible for managing or sustaining their platform today? Okay, you know that you probably are very committed to having your hands on there. You don't want anybody else to have access to it, especially the outside, because they will break something. Unfortunately, you don't have that anymore. When you go to the cloud, you lose access to logs, you lose access to servers, you have no more analytics out there, you have no SCALM monitoring to tell you what's up and what's running and if it's running well. You don't know what your latency is, you don't know what your performance is. Now, how do you define success without that information? It's been extremely difficult for us. Even with our product group relationships, we still have to check our egos at the door. We have to make that commitment. We have to jump off that bridge and have faith that the product group is going to support us. These are the guys that built the product. These guys sleep with this product. This is what they do. So what do? I have a tenant admin. This is your new central admin. This is your new owner. This is your proxy to the customer. This who is manages your farm today. And so to give you an idea of what we have, what are we at, 86 tenant admins? We have 86 tenant admins across our farm, across Exchange and SharePoint. Now, we'll get into what that means in a second. That sounds like quite a bit, and it is, especially when you see the models that we have and the risks associated to it. But these are your new owners. So everybody should be familiar with this screen. You probably have nightmares or lovely visions about this screen. This is where your primary, your portal is to support. This is where our ops team lives and breathes when we're supporting our farms. Not to dive into it, but this is what our ops team sees. But what does our end user see? Our end user gets to go through a lovely process of calling Global Help Desk. We have a Global Help Desk that accounts for everybody in the company. Person dials up 65,000 and they get a person that may or may not know what they're looking for. Most cases is a pass-through. They get a ticket, they pass it back to the individual, they escalate it up to tier two. Tier two is they have elevated permissions. They have access to the logs, they have access to SQL, they do the troubleshooting and they can access the back end to see what they see. 90%+ of all of our issues are resolved in tier two within 72 hours. Now, 72 hours, okay, still impacts the end user. If they can't resolve it, then they escalate to tier three, and this is where about 10% of our escalations go. And that's our team. And these are typically the engineers or architects that have typically, in most cases, they're a service owner. They know it inside and out. We have dedicated engineers for things like search and dedicated farms and so forth. In that case, if they can't fix it, we all scratch our head and say, oh no, and we've built an agreement and have a contract with CSS, just as most customers do. We pass it on to them and then they take it on and work with the product group to resolve the issue. This is very similar. I know most companies have something similar to this. Four steps. Not a lot of people use it. Unfortunately, you get turned off at this Global Help Desk piece because you're dealing with somebody that is a pretty dynamic role. They come in and out quite frequently and they may not have all the information they need.
We're supposed to give one of these things away.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
Let's do it.
Okay. Who would like to answer a trivia question? Okay. How many data centers do we have? Three, thank you. Okay, that's part one of the question.
All right, that's a cup. Now, would you like to risk it all for the car?
Okay, so... this is an internal joke at Microsoft.
I apologize now.
After our first service outage,
oh no,
what was Office 365 called internally at Microsoft?
Think of the title.
Office 364.
I can't believe you asked that question.
Hey. We can laugh at ourselves.
It was actually 364 and a half.
That's
the
true.
The second outage was 364. The third outage was 363 and a half.
Yeah, but most of those were our own fault.
Yeah, kind of. Deleting the, cutting our director sync off. So, one of the other pieces that you have is you got to, in addition to that, you monitor it. Now, this is a tool that we've developed on-premise. Very simple. You identify as a series of URLs and make sure you grab URLs from various depths, and then you just set a routine ping. We grab them from multiple databases. We continuously ping them. Every few
ping is the wrong word.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hit?
Yeah. We're actually sending out a request for an actual website,
and we test the string coming back, because just a regular pin just tells you that you were able to resolve the address. We actually test for content that we're looking for, and this is time to last byte for that page. So we have sites that we create that we have known content on, and we test for that on a regular basis every, I think, 3 minutes. And it's across all of our properties.
Yeah, and what it's been good is on-premise, it gives you a realistic idea of what your performance looks like. What becomes critical is we've taken this same concept and we've adopted it for the cloud. We've built some smoke test sites in the cloud. We have some heavily used sites from our organization in the cloud. And we've targeted very specific levels of each site that we do this hit. And we grab the performance metrics and we bring it back. And now we can start basing our success criteria. We've taken that dependency a little bit off the product group. And in all honesty, we keep them honest. By doing this, we have some information from our own perspective of what it actually means.
Because we are in the public cloud, we share the resources with other companies. So we could possibly be seeing some anomalies with our tenancy, whereas all the other customers that share the same unit, scale unit that we belong to, they don't see any problems at all. Yep. So we get on the horn and we ask them, hey, we're seeing some problems. They're going, nope, you got a green check mark.
And we'll see lovely screen in a second.
Yep.
And again, the definition of success and the definition of uptime differs. Search is down, we consider that a critical sub-zero, got to get on it ASAP. Based off the service offering for SharePoint Online, the service being down is a sub-1. So this helps this information, because then you can start seeing the impact of that. This is everybody's new nightmare. This is what you're going to see going into the cloud. This is the tenant admin experience. If you've been on the cloud, you've probably seen this. This is what you do. Now, it's important to note, on the left screen, it's a little choppy, but in that middle section, it says Microsoft Office 365, Exchange and SharePoint. That is not filtered. If you have tenant admin rights, you can access any service in the cloud. When Link goes in the cloud, we can access Link. Now, we have 85 plus tenant admins. That means we have 85 people that can go into Exchange, SharePoint, any component of our SharePoint Online existence, and muck with something. Microsoft is large. We have dedicated teams, both support and internal IT teams, that manage our services. And so once you start giving capabilities like this to a SharePoint, tier 2, they can go into Exchange and they can start wiping out mailboxes or migrating mailboxes. It becomes critical. It becomes potentially problematic. We had somebody come in here and kill our DirSync. We did not sync accounts for 3 days. From an accident. So it happens. We've done it. Now, we've taken a few steps to control this, but really, if you're not familiar with the tenant admin, which is one of the staples that you'll get familiar with, what can you do? On-prem, you have access to everything. Your farm admin, you access the servers, you access the logs, you have default accessibility to site collections. You're the person. You can resolve what you need to resolve. And the cloud is much, much different. You can update site quota. You can add a user. You can create a site. You can delete a site. You can manage your service configuration. However, you can't manage your My Sites. There is no My Site management in the cloud. You can do it with your team site, but in the cloud, your team sites and your My Sites are in a different location. You are unable to manage My Sites in the cloud. You have to escalate those to the product group. These are one of the lessons that we've learned and that will be there going forward. PowerShell is critical going in the cloud. This is where your power is, and PowerShell is extremely easy once you understand it and go forward. And this is one of the areas that your roles start to transition as you move into the cloud, as PowerShell becomes your key tool to do what you need. You can do things at scale with PowerShell, where the tenant admin is more of a one-to-one, one-to-few type of management. PowerShell is going to give you that scale. Licensing can be done in the cloud. Permissioning can be done in the cloud. For SharePoint, we've really restricted what we do. We have a full engagement process that we request a tenant admin, they have to go through an engagement, they have to have a sponsor, and then we do weekly to monthly audits on these to make sure that they're still applicable, or else we yank them. because of the risk. While you don't have default access to site collections, you can easily just go in, manage permissions, put yourself in there, and you're good to go. Now you have access to their content. And so you can imagine your tier one global help desk, if they have that full access, it gets kind of scary. So minimum level that we do is we provide our subject matter experts at tier two for SharePoint, which is five people access. The only other people are our service owners. So remember what I said, you gotta jump in. You have to put faith in the product group. Now, tenant admin's a proxy to the customer, not the product group, meaning the people that yell come to you and not them. And this is what you have to help inform yourself and inform and educate your customer, is this lovely dashboard. Now, this continuously evolves, but really you're relegated to three statuses. You're relegated to a green check saying everything's great. You're relegated to this little blue additional information, if you can see that, that says there's something that's going on or happened, and here's the information behind it. All you need to do is hover over that item in the workday, and I'll give you the information that they provide you. Or the dreadful red box of service interruption. If you see that, your service is probably down or latency is extremely bad. And you're dependent on, again, the product group to provide you the information. We take this information, we post it to things like an ops webpage or an IT webpage, and we use it in our social feeds that we'll tell you coming up to help push that message out and be preemptive in our communication to our end users. But this is what you get.
This is the biggest paradigm shift for IT, especially our team. We no longer have access to the logs, the SQL logs, mm-hmm. the IIS logs, because that's all in the public cloud now. So we have to rely on another service to maintain that. And they do give us this dashboard that says the general health of the tenancy. Mm-hmm. But this is where the service starts and IT ends.
Yeah, and it's important to note, they do continue to evolve this. And the product as a whole does every quarterly releases. And just recently, under the SharePoint button in this last section under service, you see the full breakout of various areas, solutions, web apps, provisioning, project online. That wasn't there a release ago, 3 months ago. They're continuously updating this, and it'll only get better. But again, you're dependent on them for information. If the product wants to give you information every 6 hours, and that's what you've got. If they want to give it to every hour, and that's what you get. If they want to wait 2 days, which they have done to us, that's what you got. So it's getting good. And I'll tell you that the information that we've gotten as we've continued to evolve, we've seen get dramatically better as an issue arises. They're reacting quicker. They're giving much more in-depth information. They're giving you commitments of when it's going to be resolved or when the next update is. This, by the time it gets into people's hands, I expect will be much, much more powerful than it is that we saw 6 months ago.
Because we have tested all of their assumptions.
Yes. Assumptions is a good word. Okay, so this is our new support model. I thought it was supposed to get easier. It doesn't look easier. It looks like
it's your slide.
I know. So you'll notice a couple different things here. The first thing now is you see peer-to-peer up top. The introduction of the cloud and the introduction of 2013 has brought on an influx of social tools. News feeds, communities, standard out of box. We use those heavily. We got thrown a monkey wrench when Microsoft purchased Yammer. Now we have incorporated Yammer. After all the work to get news feeds and communities up, we've put a new social feed in place. This is where the majority of our users are going. They do not want to call and sit online with somebody that may or may not know their issue, only to get escalated, only to wait potentially 72 hours and get escalated again. They're more than happy to come here and spend 20 minutes to write their diatribe of what's going on.
I didn't know there was that much spare time at Microsoft.
Just ask Darren. The guy sits next to us lives on these things. But this is where they go. And what he does 75% of the time is he's addressing people. He can identify a scenario. He sees a trending of individuals. He can post one message, and he said everybody that's had that scenario. He can either provide guidance, he can provide a reference, or can provide a commitment to come back to him. All with one person, he's hit many, many different people, where typically that would be this bottom part. Call the help desk in Tier 2. This part remains the same that we had before on-prem, except our MSI Tier 2 really can't do much anymore. They can basically repro a step. So what you start to see is an evolution, and we'll get into this evolution in a bit. Here we have beta rotation engineers. This is a TAP program or a partner program early on. Any partner that with Microsoft that goes through the TAP program has access to this beta rotation engineer. This is not specific to us. When you hit production, that goes away. But for now, this beta rotation engineer hits an escalation engineer. They identify if they can resolve it, if they know about it or not. If not, they go to what's a tool called CXP Web, which then pings an on-call engineer. This person will address your issue ASAP. It really does work well. We've had to use this a few times. Their on-call engineers, if it gets to that point, respond immediately. From there, they identify in three different areas. Is it a new issue? Is it a known issue with relief, meaning there's a workaround? Or is it a known issue and with no relief, meaning you're stuck? You can't do anything. Sorry, deal with it for the time being. But that's limited.
Give some stuff away.
All right, give some stuff away. I'm not creative enough to give stuff away. So, okay, here's a random question. I'll give it to the closest person. So we staff for 200 tickets a day. That's our standard. As I've mentioned, we've seen peer-to-peer taking a jump. We've just migrated. We have 25,000 people that, actually 31,000 people that are in the cloud now between sites. What's an average ticket count that we get through this bottom piece of Global Help Desk for one day? How many? No. How many? 1,200? No. No. All right, you're still close. All right, last question. How many?
Seven.
All right, you're actually right. It is seven. We've dropped to 7 tickets a day. Oh, that might be too big for you. You might be stuck. You already got a coffee cup, and you already got a car. You're stuck between smaller double XL. All right. Dry it on high like 5 times, and it might be good. We get, on average, 7 tickets a day. That's it. With everything that we've moved over, that's what we get. Because of this top piece. People are flocking to social. I don't know why. We work in an IT world. Nobody wants to talk to each other. But for some reason, they do. Everybody's got a question, and everybody's got an answer. Or everybody's got an opinion. So what we've seen is we've seen this come together pretty significantly. When Yammer was introduced to the company, we had 48,000 people join Yammer in 48 hours, an average of 1,000 an hour. People flocked to it. In parallel, we managed multiple other feeds, communities, and news feeds. People would much rather come here and post something than deal with help desk. And now we have to leverage this. If you have anybody have my or a social experience today on premise using 2007, 2010? Do you get much usage out of it? Yeah. In our usage, we have 145,000 sites, 150,000 sites. We've given people the ability to go opt in and create their own site or opt out and we'll migrate them. We've had less than 12,000 people take advantage of that. We've had 13,000 people, 12 to 13,000 people, go create a new My Site. They never had one on-prem, but they curated one in the cloud. Our on-premise existence, it wasn't used.
Shiny rock syndrome.
Extremely shiny rock syndrome. But because of the tools that they provide you in 2013, it's becoming quite impressive. Again, peer-to-peer support. No longer do we have to forecast a year out to account for 200 tickets a day. No longer do we have to potentially account for global staff. No longer do we have to account for very specific targeted message to an individual. We can now go to these platforms. We can hit an audience with one message. And it's a message that they're listening to. No longer, people don't listen to emails anymore. They just put them in an auto direct and they delete them and then cry when they didn't get it. Or they don't go to the IT web host because they got to search and figure out where the content is because we don't make it easy for them. Here, they just go and post their opinion and they can step off. And really, there's, I hate to say it, there's no accountability to them because there's no face to the name, but they get what they need and they're more comfortable doing this. You get stronger collaboration. However, the bottom point there of that first topic, you're getting a proliferation of incorrect information. And this is one of the areas that we have to address. Once you open that door up for people to ask questions and the opportunity for people to provide their own opinion or direction, you're going to get incorrect information, either information that goes against what your company policy is or what your IT standards are, or just flat out wrong.
But in many cases, it's self-policing
as
well.
It is. And it's funny that for the most part, and they jump on it pretty quick, you know, and in some cases, there's some, if you ever go watch, if when you deploy this, you go watch some of this stuff, it's pretty entertaining stuff to go read. It's like a soap opera. Again, we've watched our help desk tickets dramatically decrease. We scaled for 200 tickets a day. We brought on 10 extra heads just to handle the support calls. And we get 7 a day. Our 10 extra people that we've brought on in total have closed 7 tickets, total, across all 10 for 2 months since we've enabled this. Again, for the people from the previous session, I'm a fisherman. I love to fish. I can catch more fish with a net than I can with a hook.
It's illegal, though.
Politically correct, no. We leverage these, and we're really having to change our and evolve what we do. And I think that's the right term for it, is evolution. People aren't going to call. Leverage the tools. People know social capabilities. Kids coming out of school, the younger generation, understand this. This is how they interact. And we've had to adjust. And I was one of the biggest naysayers of this, because I'm not a big social person at work in regards to these. I would rather be doing my job than sitting on a social board. But I can't tell you how beneficial this has been. Here's just a quick sampling of what we have. We have a communities page, standard out of box. You can create them. We've built a onboarding process for them so that we can help manage this. But really, our biggest thing is that exact one that you see right there. Community, 365 community. We've put people responsible both from our sides and the product group on here. But we have our experts on here. Individuals can come, post a topic. We can post a topic of known issues, workarounds, new issues coming up, messaging. We're doing migrations potentially 24/7. So we can always put reference material here. If we have an upgrade or we run a patch in production and something happens, we can hit here. And it hits the audience. The second one is the lovely Yammer. This is what we've introduced to the company. This is what we're seeing massive growth on. It has been proven to be extremely critical. And Yammer actually gives you some of the social mining tools in the back end, where out of box today, communities and news feeds do not. And then the bottom one is news feeds. This is where you follow people, you can track people. The interesting thing with news feeds is, as I mentioned earlier, hybrid is still being ironed out, to put it nicely. If you have individuals that sit on premise and you have individuals that sit online, they cannot interact with each other for the most part without custom work. MSIT has made investments using standard out-of-the-box APIs to be able to have a single master that we can capture their entries and then bridge that gap, but out-of-box, that is not supported. So something to take into consideration. As I mentioned, it's an evolution. We've had to change dramatically. We've had to really think about what we're doing to change the support model for our end users. And that's what we're doing. We created communities. We're really leveraging the support model. We hit the broader audience. We can also start tracking utilization. Before, if we had a reference, we just said, go to this page. And there's a stack of FAQs, known issues. And we weren't able to track it. There is no in-depth linking in there. It was just, we knew a person went to this page and that was it. As we start to move over into the communities area, we can start tracking the success of our workarounds and our known issues. And it's been extremely helpful that we can start doing that. And so we're continuously migrating into our social platforms from our static on-premise reference points. In addition to that, it's searchable now. It's easily findable.
So So I mentioned in the previous session that at Microsoft, we're paid to break the software so that we find the problems before they get to you. We have a self-provisioning model at Microsoft where any person with network access can request a SharePoint site or multitudes of SharePoint sites. We brought this into the online space as well. We also create some metadata and some tagging of site collections that are requested. We have three classifications of sites. Sites that have low business impact, in other words, that they contain content that...
pictures.
Team pictures, you know, from the summer picnic, things like that. Things that are not critical to business. Then we have moderate business impact sites. These are sites that may have team schedules, things that would have moderate business impact if they were to be released to the general public. Then we have HBI sites, high business impact. These would contain things like personally identifiable information, telephone numbers, review forms and things like that, possibly credit card information,
critical material things. That gets out.
Yeah, release material, things like that. So when you request a SharePoint site, you have to classify your SharePoint site. We ask a few questions, and you fill out the form. If you've taken a look at the self-service site creation utility that comes with SharePoint 2010, this is very, very similar. We added a small panel where you enter this information, this metadata. As far as policy enforcement go, you notice that this standard 2010 site has a badge on top. It's red, it says hi. That's how everyone at Microsoft can recognize that this particular site collection is high business impact. We cannot add security groups as members to a high business impact site. You can only add individuals. If it were, let's say, a moderate business impact site, it would be a yellow badge. I think I have a slide that may even...
I think you do.
There we go.
There you go.
So these are the badges. A moderate business impact site, you can add security groups, but those security groups cannot contain a membership greater than 50 people. And if you have a low business impact site, you can use security groups till the cows come home. No matter.
And it's important to note that the classifications just aren't simply an image. People don't simply just look at images.
Right.
Microsoft has put some governance behind this that dictates, based off the onboarding form and the metadata that you gather, based off your classification. We've worked with our own internal legal teams and security teams to dictate policies, and then we can actually do policy enforcement off this same material.
Yep. At the same time, we add some metadata that gives every site collection a site expiry, and that can be set to 6 months or a year or whatever. And 1 month prior to that expiry, the site collection owners, of which there must be two, get a notification saying that they need to renew their site collection. Otherwise, in 30 days, we will close their site, put it on ice for 30 days, and then after that, we will delete their site collection. We also put a little alert on the home page of their site collection. So everybody that visits can see this alert saying that this site collection needs some administrator maintenance. We also have strict quota limits. You can have as many sites as you want, but they start out with 500 gigs of quota for storage. And if you run out of that, you can simply call the help desk. They can up that to 1 gig and then 5 gigs, 10 gigs. In the online space, we did something very, very similar. We have a little bit simpler form than on-premises, but you, in essence, do the same thing. You classify your site, say what it's going to contain, and when you click create after you sign your life away, say that you understand the online restrictions, etc.
It's my site.
Pardon?
It's my site.
It is your site. It will then create your site collection. And that site collection will have a badge that's similar to what we have on premises. You might think that this is a customization and we're in the public cloud. Well, there's an API that you can use that makes this not really a customization. You actually use SQL Azure, and you can create a worker role in Azure, and it connects through CSOM to SharePoint Online. We create an iframe that displays that little badge. Likewise, there's a worker process and that does that does our...
There'll be a quiz afterwards.
Yes. That does our site expiry through the same processes, through CSOM, through SQL Azure. So there's quite a palette of tools available through Azure, through worker processes, through CSOM, to give you that additional level of customization in the public cloud. So this is just to illustrate some of the three workflows that we have, one for provisioning and administration, one for customization, such as the badging, and one for governance, which is the cleanup and enforcement of those classification policies. And through the same methods, we put the alert at the bottom of the page of our SharePoint Online sites for the site collection administrators to go to the administrative page to renew their site collection at the right time. So, we have another.
I was just thinking we need to give something away.
Yeah, I'll let you do this one.
I think you know you got the perfect question.
Oh, I have the perfect question. Okay.
You know which one I'm referring to?
Yeah. Okay. So this is a New Zealand trivia question. You have a lovely bird here called the tui. Who knows why the tui is very unique in the world of birds? Oh.
You already got one. You're not allowed.
It has more than one voice box. That is correct. How many voice boxes does this bird have? Okay, I'll give you a hint. I'll give you a hint. It's a number between 1 and 3. Yes! You got lessons learned?
We got lessons learned. So, the important note as you move forward is that take advantage of what you got. The last session that we had, we talked about building a vision and without walls and then working towards that vision instead of starting with all your constraints and trying to piecemeal through it. Start with a vision, and what we've done is when we've done that, we're able to help dictate our path and move forward. Now, be ready to be flexible. We've had to do this, and that's what with the peer-to-peer that we've had to do. We are now in the process of having to develop data mining tools and social tools and a new role called a social moderator, which we've never had before. It's got to go through and mine this data because we have a myriad of data that sits out there that's nothing is not being done with. Typically, we take the help desk volumes and look at the tickets and categorize the tickets and then go to a meeting and present the tickets. And
we have a wonderful taxonomy system where we categorize the things. Does anybody know what the largest percentage of help desk calls, what category they are?
It's worth a coffee cup.
Yeah. Pardon me?
Passwords.
Nope.
Close.
You're not going to guess it.
Oh.
It's other.
Like I said, we got a very detailed classification model.
It's the truth.
It is the truth. And in actuality, the second piece of it is we get a lot of permission issues. The permission model for SharePoint is not the easiest thing in the world to understand. But going into the cloud, you have to understand that you've got to be flexible. It's not easy to do, especially in IT departments. Typically, you have a preset process. We have had to fluctuate, and we've had to change our role and our roadmap to leverage what the cloud is providing us, and we're seeing benefits by doing so. We're able to optimize our resources. We're able to reshuffle people around. We're able to decrease our dependency on the hardware and put that commitment into the product group, and they've met what we've needed up to this point. There's been some growing pains, as expected, just because we're dogfooding, but we've seen the evolution, and we're seeing that support place. The big thing, I mentioned this last session, you're going to hear me mention it again today if you were in last session. When you do permissions and you do your migrations, if you leverage computed groups on premise, they do not sync. And this has been a lesson learned that we had, that we've had to communicate to the product group. Since they're computed groups based off a specific attribute, they're not an AD, and they do not sync over to the cloud. They're not supported. They have no way to manage those and consistently keep those updated. We, in the last year, had made a heavy presence to go to our end users and say, re-permission your site. No more use the all authenticated users. Do it by domain-based groups. And now we have to tell them, you got to change again. Now we're working with legal to figure out mappings here, but that's a key factor to understand when you go to the cloud, especially in the support piece, because those escalations that we do get and those social boards are ripe with security group issues. And we've actually had to take a step back and modify our compatibility scripts to identify what can go over and what not to account for those. And then licensing, as we noted earlier, you as a tenant admin are responsible for licensing. You're the proxy to the customer. You're responsible for licensing and incremental licensing. You're the first point to that customer engagement. Typically, for standard customers, similar to we do, you have an engagement into the product group, and you go through their support path, and you're dependent on them. You got to have faith and jump in. It's a very difficult thing to do, but it's proven to be very efficient so far. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. I do have a question.